Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevevick.com. And just looking at the calendar, and reality sets in. Three race weeks remain on the calendar. The start of the final portion of Saratoga, the unique scenario that continues really all over the place and will continue when they open Kentucky Downs. And no sooner did we finish talking to Hammer the other day, and didn't even think really at that time to bring it up, but the news coming yesterday that Kentucky Downs will not let spectators attend, and a lot of it, you know, very predictably has to do with the uptick in cases. Kentucky and nearby Tennessee. So everything will be refunded for those that were hoping to come. And it is such a unique place. And you know, its popularity continues to grow year by year. And the racing will still be great, and you'll still be able to take it in. But you won't be able to attend. So September 7th, 9th, 10th, 12th, 13th, 16th, the schedule. And you know, you're hearing plenty of horsemen. In fact, yesterday, who was it yesterday? Dickinson. Michael Dickinson, right? Dickinson had maybe designs on a Kentucky Downs run. So yeah, it's obviously disappointing for everybody, and everyone having to just bear with it for now. And I guess on the same topic, while we're doing this kind of news, there was quite a bit of reaction to Matt Hegarty. It had some live tweets out of the Franchise Oversight Board meeting in New York yesterday, too. And part of it stemming from NYRA's CFO explaining where the association stands on financial footing under the current scenario. And, you know, one of the major questions and portions of those economic elements is tied to the casino at Aqueduct and getting it, open. And this is, this is obviously not confined to New York, but the budget, there's quite a bit of budget revenue that stems from Aqueduct, and there's plenty of questions, not so much about Belmont fall as the winter, and essentially NYRA can operate through the end and all of next year. That's basically what the CFO had to say, and Dave O'Rourke also with some comments. And when we get to the end of the Saratoga meet, we'll look ahead, maybe with Dave, to the last quarter of the year and looking ahead. But there is, there remains actually some questions as to what kind of a schedule that we're looking at for the winter, and the fact that things may particularly start slowly, with a limited December calendar and fairly limited dates early on in 2021. So that, and people are still waiting for some reason. I don't know if it happened yesterday. I didn't see a note about it, but I know a lot of people are waiting for the stake schedule, which I guess has been presented, and they're just waiting for the gaming commission. I mean, stake schedule, you would think, would be a kind of a rubber stamp formality. We'll see. Nothing is a rubber stamp formality around here. At least that's the way, that's the way it seems. Certainly, with the Wednesday arrival, start to look forward to the weekend. It's kind of an old-fashioned weekend, at least here in New York, with one big stake both Saturday and Sunday, with the four-star Dave and the Diana. I don't know why. I'm just looking here on there's a page on my desk that I don't know what this goes to. I will move it over here. It's got Anna's Bandit. Oh, it's just a blank print page. Turn it over, but Anna's Bandit is on it. One of our favorites, the Jerry Robb Great Notion Mare. I'll put that. Yeah, there we go. The weekend here, yet to be formulated. The weekend at Del Mar is drawn, if you haven't looked, at least Saturday. And Saturday marks the biggest, in a lot of ways, the biggest day of the meet at Del Mar, the Pacific Classic. And this was drawn over the weekend, if you haven't looked ahead yet. And the six-horse field, anchored by Maximum Security, coming out of that San Diego. And every indication is that Maximum Security moved forward from that race. It's had, three drills since. And in Baffert training patterns, how about a 5-furlong work, then a 6-furlong work, and then a 7-furlong work? There's not a lot of work tabs that feature that kind of progression. And they're available on XBTV too, if you want to look. And I know that the one over the weekend on Sunday, Baffert pronounced Maximum Security ready for this assignment, and all of the scheduled and expected participants lined up. Midcourt, Higher Power, Maximum Security. Also, Peter Urton putting Dark Vader into this, and Dark Vader is going to stretch out to the mile and a quarter, and is coming off of an allowance win. The 5-year-old. Ohio bred Tale of Akati, and Maria Munoz brings this Hurricane Cat colt, first North America start, coming out of Argentina. And then Sharp Samurai, Mark Glatt. And we know Sharp Samurai had been entered, first in the San Diego, and then ran in the Eddie Reed, just missed to United. United on display this weekend and on this card. If you haven't gone through the Green Flash, the Grade 3 Turf Sprint, Sparky involved, Sparkyville, one of my personal favorites, the Torrey Pines, the Mile for the three-year-old fillies, group of seven in here. Looks like an emergent Into Mischief filly for the Y Gods and Cliff Sice, Secret Keeper. Maiden winner at Santa Anita in May, and then an allowance winner at Del Mar already. Feels like the now filly. Simon Callahan will send out the Bamford Tabor Uncle Mo filly, Harvest Moon, who's also kind of on the come. So some kind of under the radar. Baffert's got a Speedway Into Mischief filly, Provocation, who lost to Secret Keeper. Merneith in here, too. We'll try for more black type. The highly heralded American Pharaoh that, you know, kind of was slow to come around. Let's put it that way, right? But she still has got upside. It's kind of, you know what, this actually is a fun group. Rudy Brissett sends Aurelia Garland in there, too. There's maiden races, some big maiden races, including a two-year-old group that is going to be closely watched, undoubtedly. You got fillies. Looking forward to talking to Jay Privman and seeing some of his clip and save column runners. The Del Mar Handicap, United, is going to be a very heavy favorite in there. And then there's one more. The Oaks, the Del Mar Oaks, on the grass, the mile and an eighth for the three-year-old fillies. And this is a fun group. And, yeah, the San Clemente Exeters, Laura's Light, Gary Barber, and Gwitty for Leonard Powell. Powell also has got a First North America type for Sal Cumin. And this one, an Anadin filly. Last seen in France, Group 3 company. This is nice, too. This is a nice group, too. First North America for Mandela as well. A French bred, a masterstroke filly coming out of the Prix de Diane. So nice to augment the domestic products with some imports. Richard Baltus has a Cantheros filly, Aqua Seaform Shame, for Calvin Wynn, coming off an allowance win down there, turf sprinting, and now is going to stretch out. And personal favorite, Warren Showtime. Do we go back? The question is, do I go back to Warren Showtime? Was one of those third place finishers, that parade of third place finishers I kept producing on Beat Pick. Speaking of which, let me give you the quick, glad that came up. Let me give you the numbers, and it actually, I thought the numbers were interesting because, I threw the Woodbine race in on Sunday, and I think we got to stick to Saratoga and Del Mar the rest of the way. Just because of, of familiarity and access and because quite notably, there were not as many people that wanted to play on Sunday, 661, and usually it's 750 or so. And, so I just wondered if Woodbine kind of was a knuckle curve, but, on Saturday, 800 of you played, 804, 86 winners. And 19 new qualifiers. And then on Sunday, quite a few came with me, actually, that's interesting, of the 661, 109 winners. So a lot of people jumped aboard Super Escape with me. And 43 new qualifiers, which is a lot. And so far, 725 qualifiers. And 75 new tour members as well. Speaking of contest play and contest discussion, after the first break, we're gonna have a visit out to Rio Doso, as I mentioned, and then also in the hour, we're looking forward to a conversation with the weekend winner, Scott Fiedler, who won the Big Horse Tourney's summer contest for over $250,000. And we'll hear from him and how he planned it, how he executed it. And what's interesting is that he appears to have had, you know, particularly on Sunday, he had some family obligations. And so, you make your plays and you kind of are watching. And so we'll talk to Scott about a huge win. And the Horse Tourney's team, the biggest payday ever in an online contest. So we'll look forward to talking to Scott as well. Let me give you today discussion. Jeff True from Rio Doso will start it. And then Scott this hour. Sid Fernando, of course, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And touch on some of the weekend successes. And I can also mention, I'll bring this up with Sid, it does appear after yesterday, another, not defection, so much, but Jesus's team, Jose D'Angelo, Jay Pribman reporting that they're going to pass. They're going to point for the Jim Dandy up here, and Jesus's team will not participate in the Derby despite being in position on the point list to participate. Essentially, Cheryl Spite is well now within range, and you have to figure that if Mr. Fipke and Roger Atfield want to run, they're going to be able to run in the Derby with the lightly raced but very impressive Cheryl Spite. So that's a developing story, as well as, you know, some of the horses that are already at Churchill and, you know, making a little bit of noise on an almost daily basis. And that included King Guillermo with that nice work the other day. And there was a nice drill from Major Fed yesterday as well. So it's not our typical lead up to Derby, but it certainly, you know, it's certainly starting to feel, you know, more like Derby. I suppose once we head out next Friday after the show and make our way to Louisville, that'll at least personally that'll really make it feel like Derby's upon us. So watching for decisions. Got to hear from the Cruel Jack team about Kiss Today Goodbye, but it's only going to take one decision to bypass Derby to get Cheryl Spite in at this point, from my list anyway. And, you know, some of the ones that have been speculated upon seem to be, you know, Derby headed, including Storm the Court. So we'll follow. We'll keep tabs. And when we talk to Jay on Friday, and I exchanged a couple of notes with Marty McGee this morning too. Marty watching, and there was that video this morning. We sent out the camp, the Tis the Law camp, with live video of Tis the Law going to the track, which was kind of fun. So they're going to do that every day. Dave Grenick says he's scheduled to actually work as opposed to just gallop on Saturday as his preparations continue coming out of the Travers win. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and I got to get Mark the numbers for Jeff and for Scott Fiedler, and we'll get going. Sid, Brian Aragone later as well, and Andy Beyer. Andy Beyer at the top of hour three. We'll talk to Andy. If you didn't see the TDN piece that Bill Finley did regarding the timing, if you've been following this story, I brought it up with Matt Hegarty on Monday as well. You know, and we had had steady, regular conversations with Jason Wilson and with Dave Siegel about the GPS timing system that Equibase and the team are installing and continue to add racetracks, and there's been real timing problems with it, and Bill Finley wrote about it, and Matt told you about some of the things we discussed on Monday, specifically the figure makers there, and Beyer, in particular, Jerry Brown also dealing with it, with hand timing, with the venues where the chart times and the running times have not been matching up. And so this topic needs further examination, and Andy Beyer will join us in hour three. Seth Merrow as well. Seth and I will look at today's card, which is kind of fun, actually. I've written up the late pick five, and Nick Tamaro's already got his analysis up. Plus, we've got Tom Herman. I'll put up Tom's Walsh novice stake analysis as well. Let's take a break here. We come back, Jeff True from Ruidoso and Scott Fiedler, the winner of $250,000 over the weekend. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow! What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 25 into hour one, and down we go to Ruidoso, and of course, getting close to All-American Futurity time, but even in advance of the most remarkable quarter horse program anywhere, there's a handicapping challenge coming up on the 29th. At Ruidoso, and Jeff True joins us to make sure everybody knows and gets involved in the opportunity. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Jeff, tell us. I mean, you guys have gotten more and more active in the contest arena.
You know, Steve, we haven't really been doing a lot of contests in the past, and this is something that I've been wanting to do here. Seemed like the right time. I mean, we didn't anticipate all the stuff that's going on this summer, of course, and the visitation issues that we've had all summer seem to preclude doing a lot of things that we wanted to do. But this contest seemed to still fit the program, and we're excited to be putting it on.
Well, and this will have the opportunity for two people to win seats, and it is on track. I mean, there's been a lot of contests that have made the shift to online, including a lot of the popular destinations. But talk about how you're going to handle it. Lone Star successfully had one about 6 weeks ago.
You know, we have an allowance by the government. Excuse me, to put up 50% occupancy on our third floor. So the Turf Club and the Jockey Club at Ruidoso have been operating since June 19th. Excuse me. And the space that we're going to have the contest in is going to be comfortable. We're going to have plenty of televisions and accommodations for players. We're an on-track kind of a racetrack. We really operate best when we have a full grandstand, I guess as most racetracks do, but in terms of our revenues and in terms of our handle, our on-track handle is a very big part of what we do, and so we're happy to have the players from around the state and around the country come see us.
What's the capacity going to be, Jeff, for the contest?
You know, we expect to have close to 50 players, or maybe I should say 50 entries. We're going to allow dual entries by an individual player. And I've set the mark at 50. So if we get there, that's going to be a successful contest, in my view. There is no limit, actually. We're going to give away two seats to the NHC, but 50 is what I'm looking for.
Well, and let's give everybody the details. It's a live money contest is how the format, and $400 entry fee, and $300 of that will be bankroll, and then $100 toward the prize pool, and you're looking at what, six mandatory race wagers?
Yes, that's correct. Those are the details. The $100 prize pool will go 100% back to the players. You're going to have six mandatory races, two from Ruidoso Downs, two from Del Mar, and two from Saratoga. We'll designate what those mandatory races are after we get entries back. But pretty simple and straightforward. You'll bet $50 for each of the mandatories. You'll have races three through, I think it's three through nine at Saratoga, and similar numbers at Del Mar in terms of optional races. And then you'll have the whole card at Ruidoso as well. Now, the Ruidoso races are going to include quarter horse races. And that's one of the things that we wanted to do at Ruidoso, was introduce players, indeed contest players, to quarter horse racing. I'm going to guess there aren't many contests around the country that include quarter horse races, but obviously that's what we do. We do have a mixed racing program here at Ruidoso, and we have probably 70% quarter horse and 30% thoroughbred racing. But we think it's a good mix of races, and it's an opportunity to introduce players to the Ruidoso program.
Well, and you know, I certainly for our listeners, when it comes to the thoroughbred side for Ruidoso, we feel confident boxing Todd Fincher, Justin Evans, and Joel Marr. That's our the New Mexico approach.
Well, I will tell you, the leading thoroughbred trainer at Ruidoso right now is Casey Lambert.
Oh, nice.
And,
nice.
Yeah, Casey's had a great summer.
How about that?
He actually brought in Champion Stables, and they're currently the leading thoroughbred owners, and that team has reeled off, I want to say it's 23 wins so far this summer, and we've still got 3 weeks to go. But Casey Lambert, Clifford Lambert's son. Cliff Lambert was the first man to ride an All-American winner back in 1959. He's currently still training. Casey had a great riding career, rode a few bulls, and is now one of the leading trainers in the state. Does a good job. So you got to throw Casey in that group. Fred Danley is also a guy who's had quite a few thoroughbred winners this summer, but it's a good group. It's a bunch of hardworking horsemen.
When did Casey stop riding?
Oh, man, you're going to put me on the spot now. It's probably been, I'm going to say, 6, 7, maybe 8 years.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
I mean, the name, absolutely. And, in fact, Tom Amos not around. I think he's had to go back to Kentucky. But, you know, he'd been here at Saratoga, and Casey Lambert famously rode Heritage of Gold to a graded stake win. I think his only graded stake win on a thoroughbred was for Amos. The wonderful Heritage of Gold. So
yeah.
I'll confirm that.
He's also a top roper. He won several thousand dollars just about 3 weeks ago at a big team roping. So he's quite the horseman and quite the cowboy.
That's very cool. And while we're on this topic, give everybody the schedule toward Futurity as well, because Labor Day fast approaching.
Labor Day weekend is our biggest weekend of the year, obviously. We'll have racing Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We'll run the All-American Gold Cup, which is an aged horse race at a quarter mile, on Sunday afternoon. We'll run the All-American Derby and the All-American Oaks, a new race that we've introduced this year, all three of those races on Sunday. Then Monday afternoon, we'll run the $3 million All-American Futurity. It'll be the last race on the card, last race of the year, in fact. And that'll go off right around 5 p.m. Mountain Time Monday afternoon. It'll be aired live on the Cowboy Channel. They'll have a 90-minute live telecast that afternoon from 4 to 5:30 p.m. Mountain Time, again on the Cowboy Channel, and we'll air the what we call the Juvenile Stakes. It's for the second 10, the 11th through 20th fastest 2-year-olds. We'll go in the All-American Juvenile for about a $200,000 purse, and then we'll run the $3 million All-American Futurity at a quarter mile as the last race, race 10, in that telecast.
Jeff True with us from Ruidoso, and I did see where Mary Rampolini had sent out a note on DRF about the trials. And trials, I think you'll put the field together this weekend, Friday and Saturday?
Yes, we have, in quarter horse racing, we have what we call time trials, and they are typically 2 weeks before the finals. So we'll have all the horses that have maintained their payments, their sustaining payments into the race, will enter, as they did this past weekend, and we'll run 16 time trials on Friday and 16 time trials on Saturday this weekend. The five fastest from each of those days will meet on Labor Day Monday for the $3 million purse. So it's a pretty tough deal to get into. You got to run two races, you got to run them 2 weeks apart, and you got to be one of five fastest on any given day, 5 out of 150, to get to the big dance. We'll do that for the 2-year-olds. Then on Sunday, we'll have 13 trials for 3-year-olds. And those include four races for Oaks, which are restricted to fillies, of course, and then nine races for an open Derby. The Derby will be $1.1 million. The Oaks will be about $400,000. And those are obviously big races for this business as well.
Very much, and it's always a kind of a sidelight and something that I just take a curious interest in, and it's one of the most amazing days in equine sport, the All-American Futurity, and obviously one of the richest, and the way the Futurity system works, and we have a few of these in thoroughbreds, Jeff, and the one closest here in New York, the two races out at Finger Lakes. The Lady Finger and the Aspirant, and those are nomination. There's not a series of payments. There's basically, the one registration that you do with a weanling, and that puts together a sizable pot, typically 120 to 150 thousand. But the series of payments that are made toward the Futurity is what makes that pot so enormous.
Yes, it is. It's a program that was started back in the 50s. The question was, how can we generate a big purse when we don't have a lot of gambling? Certainly back in those days, didn't have a lot of revenue at the racetrack to be pouring into purses. So typically what we have, and the way we do our program, is in January of the yearling year. So these are horses that have just turned a year old. They've just become yearlings. Breeders and owners will nominate those horses to the Triple Crown at Ruidoso. They'll make three payments, $100, $150, for February, April, and June, I believe. They'll stop those payments, and a lot of times those horses will go on to a yearling sale. Many of those horses change hands between June and the fall of the year. So we have a yearling sale. We run a horse sale, the biggest one in the cold horse business, here at Ruidoso. So we'll sell about 600 head of yearlings in the fall. Then in November, those two-year-olds with their new owners will start nominating and making payments to the individual Triple Crown races. So in January, we'll get 1,200 head of horses, nominate to the Triple Crown. In October and November of the year, of the same year, those horses will start making nominations to the individual Ruidoso, Rainbow, and All-American Futurities. Those are the three races that make up the Triple Crown. And then by entry time, that original 1,200 will usually be winnowed down to about 350 to 400 head eligible for a set of trials. We'll get anywhere from 270 to 300 enter the Futurity trials. We'll run those time trials and then run the final back 2 weeks later. So the Ruidoso Futurity is the first Saturday in June, which coincides with the Belmont Stakes. That's $1 million Futurity. We'll come back 4 weeks later, run the set of Rainbow Time Trials. That's $1 million Futurity. Then we'll come back 4 weeks after that, after the final of the Rainbow, as we're doing this weekend, and run the All-American. And incidentally, if you check around the globe, the All-American Futurity is the richest two-year-old horse race on the planet. There's not another two-year-old race at $3 million plus.
No.
Now, there is the big race in Australia. Depending on the currency exchange, there have been years where the Australian race was more than $3 million. But in the last several years, we've had the distinction of being the richest two-year-old race in the world. And we take that pretty seriously. So it's a big event that we anchor our meat on.
Well, it's going to be a pretty heady weekend going into Labor Day, but in advance of that, you got these trials this Friday and Saturday. Then next week, next Saturday, the opportunity to go to Ruidoso and participate in the handicapping challenge. And Jeff, how do players? Obviously Texas, Oklahoma, Arizona, neighboring states. People that have been to Ruidoso, or even if they haven't, that are just anxious for a contest visit, a live in-person contest visit. How do they register? How do they get in touch?
RaceRuidoso.com, RaceRuidoso, RaceRuidoso.com. There's a place there to sign up. You can make your registration right there online with a credit card. When you get here, we'll have a gift package and a contest card with the bankroll. Obviously, as you mentioned, it's a live money contest, so everything you win is yours to keep, and you've got the biggest number, we'll send you to Vegas. Expenses paid for that big contest, but we'll start on that Saturday with Del Mar and Saratoga. Our post time that day will be 1 p.m. And if you haven't been to Ruidoso, we're at about a 7,500 foot elevation. We're up in the mountains of central New Mexico. It's a beautiful pine forest area. It's a great resort area. There's a couple of nice hotels here. It's a great little ski town in the winter, and really it's a horse racing town in the summer. I liken this place to a cross between Saratoga, Del Mar, and Keeneland, because we have the highest quality quarter horse racing. We have a great tourist location. We have the best quality horse sale each summer, and probably the richest, most attractive stakes program in quarter horse racing. And if you haven't played quarter horse racing, it's a great place to come and see it, experience it, and get your head into the game. Not so different from thoroughbred racing, and I'm a lifelong career horseman and have played all breeds that run. So I invite players to take a shot and come see us here at Ruidoso.
Well, and Jeff, I'm delighted to get you on and focus some attention, some spotlight on the contest and on the biggest weeks in quarter horse racing leading up to the All-American Futurity and now the Oaks and the Derby as well for the 3-year-olds. And I would love at some point to get there, and I will take the opportunity to pass the condolences to everybody on RD's passing a few months ago now. But I mean, an absolute giant, and so associated with Ruidoso.
Yeah, D was quite a guy. He built this place over his 30 years of ownership, and he's really responsible for. He and his group are responsible for the Ruidoso Triple Crown program being where it is today. I mean, The racetrack changed ownership in 2017, and that's what brought me here. Dee had built this program for a long time. We take that mantle, and we take that responsibility for the All-American Futurity and its legacy. We take that forward, but certainly Dee was a giant. Unfortunately, he never won the race himself. He tried a long time. He won every position. He finished... Horses of his finished in every position except the top position.
Wow.
So it's a little bit of a struggle. It was a struggle for him lifetime, but he took a lot of pride in the race, and we certainly take a lot of responsibility in continuing that race. And, having the Kentucky Derby and the All-American Futurity on the same weekend is certainly an odd occurrence, but we'll celebrate it.
It's going to be a big equine sport weekend, no doubt. RaceRuidoso.com to sign up. And Jeff True, thank you so much. I'm sure we'll visit again.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Steve.
Not at all. Jeff True, everybody, from Ruidoso Downs. And I couldn't resist the opportunity to get a little out ahead of really one of the great moments in equine sport anywhere in the world. And Casey Shadow, if you haven't seen Casey Shadow, the Ruidoso Downs, the quarter horse capital, and the All-American Futurity. Now, will turn with the contest coming up on the 29th there at Rio Doso, we'll look back to this weekend because the spa and surf contest that ended up with a pool of over 600,000 on horse tourneys. And I was watching. Scott Carson kept sending out the leaderboard, and Scott Fiedler started to kind of take control, and there were anxious moments. But when the dust settled, it was a magical weekend for Scott, who joins us now. Scott, congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. Still not sure I believe it.
Well, this story, I mean, we'll talk about how you engineered the victory, but the fact that you're in a situation that has been so impacted by the COVID conditions, sure. And you're in New York, and you've got a business that revolves around summer sports camp activities,
yep.
And you've been restricted. So to take the chance to put this money up and then to really probably carry you through what has got to be just an arduous situation.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's been. In my wildest dreams, I never thought that not winning the tournament, the other stuff, and not to get into politics, but I couldn't believe, here I have a business and I understand the pandemic, but my God, I don't have a chance to open. Wow. And we're in a seasonal business that, guess what? You're losing a whole year of income, basically, by not opening.
So, well, and you're still going to pay taxes on the property. And,
there you go. Exactly. You're still paying taxes on the property. You're still paying your insurance premiums. And there's plenty of things that are still going on. And, and like I said to someone, they go, oh, but you got the PPP money. I said, yeah, I got the PPP money. That's like throwing a deck chair off the Queen Mary. I mean, come on.
Well, and let's tell everybody. I don't want a chance for for people, especially in our in our area in
sure.
in the metropolitan area, for their children for next summer to know what you do. Tell everybody about the camp.
Well, I mean, it's a pretty amazing thing. My dad had the camp years ago. We were a traditional summer sleepaway camp, pretty heavy into sports and. My brother, who played in the NFL for 10 years, him and I had an idea to sort of change focus a little bit and do something we thought no one in our industry could do, and that was sort of to bring in these professional coaches and celebrities and things. So, I mean, for instance, Jay does a couple weeks of football where kids could focus in on football. We do, I have very good friends with Leo Mazzoni, the old pitching coach of the Atlanta Braves, and he comes in and does baseball for us. We have a sports broadcasting program, which now I'm going to get Steve Bick up there next year, where we
have
Adam Schefter and Steve Levy and a bunch of those guys have come up through the years. Mike Breen, who's a good friend of mine, have come up and done our broadcasting program. So it's it's an amazing place where you could be a kid, do your thing, have fun, and also get some pretty good training in different sports and different things that we do. So,
too fun. Tell everybody, and obviously for those that haven't connected the dots, the reference of his brother, my brother, the quarterback, Jay Fiedler. But Scott, what's the name of the camp and what's the website so people can look it up?
Sure, Steve. It's the Sports Academy at Brookwood Camps. And the website is brookwoodcamps.com, brookwoodcamps.com.
You said something just hysterically crazy to me. I know Leo, and I wrote a piece for, I'm going to even forget where it appeared, but he was at, before he came to the big club,
right.
he was the pitching coach at.
Yeah, he went up through the minors with all those great pitchers.
Yes.
People don't even know that he went through the minors with, Tom Glavine.
Tom Glavine and Smoltz, yep. Smoltzy, and yep. all of those kids. And I was living, this must have been when I was living in Charlotte, and
uh-huh.
I think. And I wrote, I wrote a story, and that's hysterical. That you bring up.
Great guy. I mean, I was coaching college basketball when I met him. We were at a dinner together.
Too funny.
We just became great friends, and he's one of the funniest people I've ever met. I mean, he's a riot, and he was the first guy I called when Jay and I came up with the idea of doing, the specialty sports training within a traditional sleepaway camp.
And, unbelievable.
And he, you know, to his credit, right away he said yes. And you know, I said, all right, Jay, let's get to work on the other sports. You know.
Well, he basically with Bobby Cox, right? I mean, they were like an entry, 1-1A.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'll say hello for me. That
I
is so great.
Will.
I've got an amazing picture, a black and white picture that I took of the bullpen. And there's literally, it's a murderer's row of what became Hall of Famers. I mean, it's just crazy what was going on that
program. It was unbelievable. I had been in that bullpen as well. It's an amazing, I mean, the first time I went to the bullpen, John Smoltz was rehabbing. I didn't know he was rehabbing. And I say to Leo, damn, you know, Smoltz, he really throws it. And he's like, yeah, Scotty, he's rehabbing. I'm like, man, when do I know one could hit this guy? I'm thinking, well, wow, you know, it was unbelievable.
I've got to look up what the team was because not only were there, you know, the terrific pitching staff that came together, but there were also position players that were that were on their way. I mean, I think Chipper Jones was already up on the big club,
yep.
But this has got to be around 84, give or take. I'm guessing, and I really had fun. Too funny. Now you're going to make me go dig out my notes and everything else.
That's it. I'm going to hold you to that, too.
Too funny. Scott, let's dive into the horseplay side of this.
And absolutely.
How much contest play have you been doing, I've seen your name on leaderboards.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny. Been playing horses since high school, you know. I knew people and that. We used to go to Roosevelt Raceway, which now is no longer. When we were in high school, me and a buddy used to go every weekend, you know. We used to love that. And then, you dive into the thoroughbreds. And it was funny, about 5 or 6 years ago, I stumbled across these tournaments. And I'm saying, wow, you know, this is pretty interesting. You know, I always said I'm a great handicapper and a lousy bettor, and I'll tell you how I could do what I did in the tournament and miss the late pick five at Del Mar. You know, it's just, a lot of guys will say that. So I guess I found this site, Derby Wars, at the time.
Yeah.
And, I started diving in, playing, and, you know, you make your mistakes early. And I think it was about 2015 Breeders' Cup. I won. There was a $25,000 tournament that day. I came in first in that. I think it was about a $9,000 payday. And then it was interesting again. Then the horse tournaments were illegal to play in New York
mm-hmm.
for a couple of years, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is unbelievable. You know, here I go. I found something I really enjoy and can't play. So, of course, you know, you didn't play for a while. You went back to just doing regular, gambling and horse race, handicapping. And then, of course, it opened up again, and I found that this horse tourneys was, the pools were just so much better than the other site. It was amazing what was going on. And, I've won a few. I've blown a few like everybody else. And, I just think it's a fun. It's really a fun thing. I love playing against. You know, you see the same names every week. You know,
yeah.
You know you're playing the best against the best handicappers in the world, and there's nothing better than that.
Talk about your approach, and then we'll get into how the 2 days unfolded. What are your methods? What are your tools?
Okay, I mean the. Obviously, it's, race, preparation, handicapping up with the form. I still use the daily racing form. I'm an old school guy. I use the formulators. because I love to watch the, as I call them, backtracks of the previous races. You know, I think you really get a feel for what was out there. And then, as everybody else, I have a million different angles that I look for, you know, from speed versus better to a bunch of, you know, trainer angles and, you know, a jockey upgrade, you know, those the little things. And like everybody else, I think I'm looking to beat the favorite first, and then, you know, we go from there. I've enjoyed the live tournaments because I think you get the benefit of, you know, checking some of the will pays and things that, you know, are a little tricky in that as well, as, you know, most horse players know, you know, so you get the benefit of those.
This contest that, you know, put together a pool of over 600,000, and there was a tons of for months, actually, there's been qualifiers to get into it, and essentially it's become, you know, other than, you know, some of the Triple Crown season and and Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, I mean, this is as big a opportunity for players as there is out there. Once the entries were finalized on Saturday, 364 entrants and prize pool of over 600,000 and day money options as well, and a grand prize of 232,112. What and you know, being spa and surf, obviously it's Saratoga and Del Mar. All mandatories, and so it's really a marathon. I mean, you're basically in it for a long haul of 2 days. You know, especially I mean, considering that Del Mar ends at what, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night.
10:30 on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's you better, you know, you're looking at 12 hours a day, just, you know, tabbing the races.
Sure.
Talk about the handicapping that goes into it, and what your approach was, and then how the 2 days evolved.
Well, I'll start going back to Wednesday before the tournament, and you know, you'll appreciate as a horse player. So I'm in a qualifier where the top six make the tournament, 130 other people. What place do I finish? Seventh. I play another one later on that day where the top two come in. I finish third. I said, boy, this is maybe I'm not supposed to play the tournament this year. So I play Friday. I try a qualifier again Friday, and I play the featured the featured money tournament. I think I finished seventh in the money tournament. Of course, I don't qualify, so I think it was a $600 I get back. So now I got about $700 in my account, and I keep saying to myself, how do I not play this tournament? And Saturday morning, I just decided, guess what? I'm going to pony up the money, and I'm playing. Thank God I did, obviously. And obviously, Friday night, I had looked at the races, and I really liked the late portion of Saratoga, and I liked the late portion of Del Mar. On Saturday, I thought there were a lot of shots to make, you know, to make money. And, you know, and these, what I found out through all the years is, listen, you have to have price horses, you know, you need to, take the money. You know, the other thing I've learned from playing is to take the money sometimes when you can't find something else. And I think that definitely helped me, particularly in this tournament, where I think a lot of Sunday morning, when I didn't think he could beat the favorites early, I took a few dollars here and there, and then I really liked the horse in the third at Saratoga, which paid off, and I thought, boy, I'm in good shape now. You know, of course, you never should think that in these things, because things change very quickly. So anyway, Saturday, you know, to be honest, uneventful early. I was upset with myself in the ninth race. I had the eighth at Saratoga. I was between Domestic Spending at Chad Brown and Bama and Breeze. Of course, I went with the higher price. of course, who wins domestic spending? And you know, you get Chad at almost 5-1 was, you know, when does that happen?
Yep.
You know, you don't get him that often there. And then I think I had 2 seconds at Delmar, the next two, I'm sorry, Delmar, the second I have a place. And then I like Bonnie South in the feature at Saratoga, who ran second as well. At the end of the day, I was looking. Freedom and Whiskey was a horse I had targeted from the beginning. I really liked the trainer change to Chad Summers. I didn't think his races were quite as bad as they looked on paper, and he was dropping, you know, the greatest drop in horse racing, made in special weights to maiden claimers.
Yep.
And of course, the funny story that with that is my wife and my twin 9-year-olds go out to dinner as this is coming on. So we're out at dinner, and you know, at that point, I'm probably in 100th. I don't even know where I was. Of course, I'm literally watching the race under the table there. My son, who always says, "What are you doing, Daddy? Watching the horses?" I'm trying to tell him, "Hey, just you know, don't tell Mommy again. Come on, you know, you're killing me, boy. You know, don't do that to me." So, of course, you know, Whiskey and Freedom win, and I said, "Wow, now I have to check the leaderboard. I have to have moved up significantly." Of course, I think it put me into 8th place. And then we go. Thank goodness, you know, dinner's over. I go home. I actually go up to my office upstairs, and now I'm into the late Delmar card, which I had said I really liked. You know, Undeniable Proof, who I thought was going to go off at bigger odds than he did. I thought he was a front-running horse that can hold on. Of course, he did. And then the two next races, which you had the heavy Baffert favorites. You know, I really like Peter Miller's horse. And
nice.
And then I,
12-1.
And then I like Pulpit Rider in the next one. And, you know, of course, luckily they both came in. And, you know, here we go. I'm starting the march to, wow, you're in first place. You know. Of course, here's the 10th at Delmar, which is the favorite one, which I left off my late pick 5 ticket.
Oh, Jesus.
wanted to kick myself for it, but, you know, as you know, we all do those things. We're putting tickets together. And I'm saying, you know, I called one of my buddies after the day was over who, you know, I play horses with, and I said, well, there's two things. One, you're not going to believe it. I'm in first place in this, you know, spa and surf tournament. And two, you're not going to believe how the heck could I miss Pyron in that race when I have all the long shots already.
Unbelievable. You know? I mean, 3-5.
Yeah, 3-5. And I mean, and I was 4 deep in that race on my pick 5 ticket. So, you know, you could imagine I'm saying, wow. But then, of course, I go, okay, you know, I just won 16,000. You know, in so many ways, you're playing with house money, you know, now you say. Of course, that house money is nothing compared to what you can win. And my buddy reminds me of that and says, hey, you know, you got a good shot to win this thing now. You got to go do it. I said, okay. But on Sunday, my mother had fallen on Friday, and she broke her collarbone. So my brother was over there watching her, and I promised that I would go Sunday morning and see her and bring the kids and my wife. And so it was raining Sunday morning, thank goodness. I said, let's go a little earlier, guys. You know, let's leave at 10:30 instead of the 12 o'clock we were talking about so I could get over to Grandma's. Now, let me backtrack, too. Of course, after I'm in first place, I finally decide to tell my wife, yes, I'm in another tournament. You know, and it's okay. And I, you know, so I show her, hey, I just won 16,000. So, of course, she says to me, great, now I can get a nice birthday present because her birthday is coming up soon.
Nice.
And I said, yeah, but I have a shot. And I show her, you know, the prize pool. And my, you know, of course, she looks at it, but I don't want to know about it. I don't want to know what it is. You know, don't tell me. Don't tell me. So I said, okay, I'm not telling you. You know, so we go to my mother's on Sunday morning. Jay's there, so I'm sitting with Jay, and I said, you know, does Mom have the OTB channel? We got to turn it on. I got to, you know, and I tell Jay what's going on. And he's like, holy cow, you know, this is great. And so we're sitting, you know, my mom's with the kids. It's everything's wonderful, and we're watching the OTB channel, and, you know, I'm going downstairs to the computer to put my plays in every, you know, 15, 20 minutes, and, you know, at early Saratoga, like I said, I really liked Officer Hutchie in the third. I thought that it was going to be favorites early, so I just basically took, you know, the $18, which turns out to be what, you know, was pretty much the margin of victory at the end. So I'm very happy I did that. Of course, now Officer Hutchie wins, and I think I was about $50 more at that point than anybody on the board. And as you know, it's a $64 cap. So I'm saying, if I could just get over 64, wow, this would be, you know, amazing.
Yeah.
So we stay through the seventh at Saratoga, my mother's. Of course, now we got to go home because we got other things that we have to do. I got 9-year-old twins. They can only sit for so long with their grandmother. And we start driving home. So it's about a half-hour ride. So I'm thinking that I wanted to get home before the ace at Saratoga. And I had put in, before we left, JC Shooting Star, who, as you know, goes on to win the race.
Yeah, we had Dave Donk yesterday.
Yeah, and Dave Donk, I bought two times, this guy Kitten, I was between him and the 9 horse that got stuck in the gate in that race. And I really like JC Shooting Star. So now I'm driving home. You know, don't do this at home. You know, I check my phone quickly because I want to see what the odds are now, you know. And JC Shooting Star is literally 5-1. And I'm like, God, that's, you know, he's getting, I don't like it at 5-1 anymore. What's going on here? So now, of course, instead of, you know, going 60 miles an hour, I'm going 70 because I want to get home before the race. Of course, to my luck and unluck, I do get home about 2 minutes to race to post time, and I change my pick to Prairie Fire. And of course, JC Shooting Star wins and was 10, you know, went off at 10-1.
10-1, yeah.
Yeah, and I said, boy, if I had not touched that, you know, I'm pretty much, you know, coasting through this tournament, you know. And of course, now you start to go, oh, how do I do that? Why am I doing that? You know,
you start to quite, yeah, you get unnerved.
You get the head games going.
Yep.
You know, I was telling to Eric Wing at Horse Tony's, I said, you know, what I go back to is I said, I remember Herb Brooks in the 1980 Olympics and yelling to the guys in the third period, play your game, play your game, play your game. And I always go back to that. Don't get off tilt now. You're still in first place. Yeah, you should be way ahead, but, you know, play the game that you've been playing. You're doing fine. So, I guess I was pretty, you know, uneventful for the next few races. I don't hit anything. Nothing really changes much. I believe the third at Delmar, Biddy Duke wins.
Yes.
And pays a nice price.
9-1, Biddy Duke, the Doug O'Neill.
Amazing. Amazing. And I think I go into second place for the first time in a long time by about $1.10. And, you know, now you're going, you know, even though it's only $1.10, here we go. You know, am I going to, I can't blow this thing now. So we get to the fourth at Del Mar, and it was very funny. A friend of mine had told me the day before he really liked Chrissy's Tiger. And I couldn't see it. And I went to my little runaway, who wound up running second in the race. And, of course, that 860 put me back in first place, so it's close still, but I'm now, I guess, in first again. And then, you know, I thought Pure Comedy was the only play in the fifth at Del Mar. I thought the favorites or him could win. I go to Eskimo Roses in the sixth, who didn't run, and then came Sign of the Cross, and it was funny, you know, like I told Eric, I said, Leonard Powell to me has always been he's a sneaky guy, you know. When he's at a price, you got to look at him.
It's a good
trainer. You know, again, I looked back at some of his stuff. I went back to the race before, and I said, boy, you know, is the play. He's the play. And, I mean, I didn't think he was going to win like that, but, you know, now I'll take the 29-40, and it puts me, I think, I'm close to 40 or 50 ahead again, which is a fairly comfortable lead. Then, of course, I decide I got to give everyone a chance to catch me by...
getting cold?
No. So the funny story here is I like Charming Slough in the next at Del Mar, the six horse with Smith on him. And I think I put the pick in. And now I'm in my upstairs office. My daughter comes in with about 4 minutes to post, and she's just talking to me about, you know, what nine-year-olds talk about. Did I like her bracelet? Is it nice? All these things. And I'm saying to myself, Morgan, not now. Come on, you know, I got to concentrate. I'm close to, you know, and I'm not telling my kids what's going on. So now I'm, you know, I got to concentrate. I'm close to winning a lot of money here, you know. So with a minute to post, Morgan walks out, and now I start to go back to the computer. Just at that point, her twin brother walks in. Daddy, do you have the phone charger? My iPad's dead. Could you get me the charger? Could you? So what do? I step by, I have the charger. I pull the charger. I go back to my computer, and I go to look at, you know, who everyone takes. And the guy in second, I forgot who it was at the time, has Charming Slough also. And now I'm going, I cannot believe I'm going to do this. I'm going to lose here on something that's just so crazy that no one will ever believe what just happened. And, of course, Charming Slough goes right to the front, like I thought. And I'm going, please, please, please don't win. You know, and I guess that was like a scene out of The Grifters, you know, with Angelica Houston. Troubadour, please don't win, Troubadour. Please don't win, Troubadour. And thank God, you know, it was a favorites race. I think Ice Baby or something won, didn't pay much. The leaderboard really didn't change. Nice Ice it was, and the leaderboard really didn't change. The night at Del Mar was interesting because Wi-Fire and the guys behind me had him. Louis Mendez pulled this, I guess it was about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, a huge Baffert favorite. And
yep.
He had a horse with experience, and he wound up winning. And my first inclination was to go with that one. And I'm looking more, and, you know, I'm seeing Simon Callahan's horse is $1 million, you know, purchase, ceiling purchase. I'm looking at the breeding. I'm looking at Baffert's horses. And I wind up on Baffert's, the other Baffert, as they used to say, you know, the yep. second Baffert, who I guess basically both of them ran, you know, third and fourth. Of course, Wi-Fire does win. You know, Louis Mendez pulls it off again.
It's amazing.
And unbelievable. And, you know, now it's close again. I think it's an $18 spread from me and Bill Alberg. I did love overthinking in the feature. I thought he ran a great race, ran third. You know, maximum rate was just better. I thought if I could get overthinking at least to run second, you know, it's another $9, $10. It puts me in very good shape with... There were some scratches in the last at Belmont. So, of course, now I think it's about an 1880 spread with one race left. I look at my sheet, you know, I scribble down, you know, numbers a lot, and two of the horses that I like were scratched. So 4 and 8 got scratched. And then I said the 9 and 10 were the other two I like. But, of course, as you know, now you're not playing for money anymore. You're playing to protect yourself at this point. When you're
exactly.
So, you know, so now I look, I said, okay, it's got to be 5 to 1 or better for someone to beat me, you know, winning. And, you know, hopefully one of the favorites comes in and would knock any of the, you know, place prices down enough. So I'm looking at the race and I said, okay, now you got the bottom three who, you know, I like. Bedrock, I like 9 and 10 Bedrock in point of Poised to Strike. But of course, they're the favorites. So I said, I can't play those. So you'd be a fool to play those. So I said, now who's the next logical plays that could win the race? And I came down to U.S. Danger and Floyd Moneymaker. I went with Floyd Moneymaker because it was the other Val Brinker hot horse. Val had the favorite. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be in good shape. This is who Bill Alberg's going to pick. To Bill Alberg's credit, he made an unbelievable pick with Endless Tail. And thank God the two favorites beat him down the stretch. And I held on, as they say.
And the, you know, the difference, I mean, there was a very significant, you know, difference here, because winner, $232,000, yeah. Second was worth essentially $93,000, and there's actually a sidebar, we're going to talk to John Hurd, too, because John had the non-starter.
John Grant third, and I thought he was he made a pretty good play, too, to try to get into second, and it's a significant amount of money, you know. So I thought his was an interesting play in that last race.
Well, and he also basically got taken. He had the non-starter.
The non-starter
cost him $50,000.
Yes, and I'll tell you what was crazy about that. You know, here we go, and you know, you're a horse player, Steve, forever, and I go, holy cow! You know, I just won $232,000. And then the inquiry sign goes up. You know, I don't know why it went up at first. You know, so I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Like, I'm going to have to sit through an inquiry to, you know, at this, you know, this amount of money? I didn't hit a $20 horse, you know, for $20. I just won. And then when they said it was, you know, looking at the 11 as a non-starter, I said it actually, again, it helps me because, you know, odds are going to go down now on any of the horses that were there. But it was an interesting ride, as they say. You know, I think now when I get the emails about hashtag beat Beck, I may have to play once in a while.
Well, it was especially because it was obvious that you've had you were hot all week, and you know, you culminated with this win, and you know, you got the 230, but you also had the day money from Saturday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this was a $250,000 weekend.
Yes, it was.
Unbelievable.
It really was unbelievable. You know, it was an amazing ride. And, you know, and it's funny. It just, you know, and as you know, you're always trying to validate yourself as a handicapper against some of these, you know. And, again, I know the names, you know, and I can't wait to, you know, I've qualified for the NHC. I can't wait to meet some of these guys and pick their brains about, you know, they're handicapping, because I think you could always learn things from people.
I was going to ask you about your NHC status and opportunities in terms of Vegas. Have you not been before?
I have never been before. No.
How about that?
Yeah. So and that was I played a Wednesday tournament on Horse Tourneys on a lark. I actually was playing. It was funny. I was playing Lone Star at the time, just, you know, betting. And Dave Weaver is on the air and says, someone asked him about his pick in the fourth at Lone Star. And he says, well, I really haven't looked at that because I've looked at the late card because I'm playing in an NHC qualifier. So I go, wow, there's an NHC qualifier today? Hi, you know what? Let's go play. And, you know, because I had already looked at the card, I said, let's go play. You know, and it's funny, I've never... You know, when I won a few of the bigger ones, I chased a couple of NHC qualifiers, but I was never, you know, I have to go there. I didn't want to ever spend a ridiculous amount of money to qualify.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you're laughing at it. I think I have 0 points in the NHC. You know, that's how often I've played those tournaments, of course, but I did win the one qualifier. So, you know, I'll be in Vegas, hopefully in February with, you know,
yeah,
having a lot of fun with a lot of other great horse players.
Tremendous. I was watching along, and then I saw, you know, Eric wrote about the weekend as well on his weekend recapping at Horse Tourneys, and couldn't resist the opportunity to hear it from you while you're still aglow, and you know, all the things that it does, you know, in terms of, you know, the pressure of the business and such a difficult summer.
Oh yeah,
you know, having a season.
And the other thing, Steve, is the crazy part is if I was, if the business was open, I don't know if I'd play the
tournament.
Oh,
good point.
Because,
yep.
You know, I'm upstate. We probably have about 400 football players up there at the time.
How about that?
So it would, if I had won it then, it would have been a different story. You know, I was
unbelievable.
In between beating kids and for practices.
That's right. That's right.
It's just, you know, like I said, it's an interesting thing all around. And, I mean, you know, I think these tournaments have been great for the sport. I you know, it's a sport I hope continues to grow. You know, it's had its moments as always. And, you know, as you, I'm very passionate about it. It's a great, you know, it's a great sport. It's a great thing to me to watch, you know, horse racing.
Have you had any ownership dabbled at all? Have you?
Just my brother dabbled, and I told him, I think you're crazy. as much as I always said I would love to own a Kentucky Derby winner or something like that, I always said that's not my income stream. You know, I'm not in the income where I could afford to lose a lot of money if not. So, you know. I've never dabbled. Jay had a couple thoroughbreds, you know, for a couple years, and then he's gotten back into the handicapping side of it as well.
Nice. Nice. Well, I'll invite people to brookwoodcamps.com about sports instruction, professional sports instruction for your children for next summer, and some of the other programs available at the camp as well. And Scott, if we don't see you between now and Vegas, we'll look forward to Vegas. Best wishes and congratulations again. Thanks for coming and telling the story.
Thanks, Steve, and I look forward to meeting you in person and spending some more time sharing stories about people we know and the horse racing business.
That's what's so great about this game. No matter what the walk of life you come from, it's a great equalizer, and it just brings people together. The common interest, it's what makes it like nothing else.
Yep.
Scott Fiedler, everybody, and a $250,000 score over the weekend, and Vegas as well, courtesy of a midweek qualification. Let's take a break. We'll come back. I got Sid Fernando standing by. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. Brian Aragone will join us because later today, into the early evening at Canterbury, you've got the Minnesota Oaks, the Minnesota Derby, and three other stakes, and all stakes, 10% pick five, actually. Brian will walk you through that. We've got Andy Beyer to talk about the situation with the automated timing system that Equibase is trying to execute. And you know, we've had conversations over the last several years about its potential, and there's obviously some bugs, and it's forcing figure makers to hand time races. So Andy will talk about that. Plus, Seth Merrow and I will look at today's Saratoga action. More after this. Sid Fernando joins us after a break.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and two special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 AP Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial? What career track are you on?
The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow! What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.